There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Danica is on vacation. This is podcast number 296, August 6th, 2008. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen, and of course we thank Yahoo Ads. On today's program, Damon Hill backs Kimi Raikkonen. Honda really wants Fernando. Is Nick Heidfeld getting a fair shake? And Motorsports Mundial with the king of Karachi himself, Mr. Nasser. I mean, Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely wonderful. So much happening on the World Wide Web in terms of F1 news. It's all over the place. And I'm actually completely bewildered by some of this stuff. I mean, I just went on my own forum, and now it says it's Fernando and Kubica going to Ferrari in 2010. So, I mean, the silly season, the internet, everything is out of control. And I'm not sure what to believe anymore. Steve, help me.
Why is it that Ferrari gets all the top drivers? Why can't they go someplace else? Is it automatic that, you know, you're one of the faster drivers in the grid and therefore you're going to Ferrari?
Well, Ferrari's got the what they call allure, the je ne sais quoi.
They do have a bit of history in Formula One, well, so I can imagine that.
I mean, when you're there since 1950, you still have that certain, you know, the prancing horse brings shivers to drivers' spine, whether they admit it or not. I mean, a lot of them won't admit it, but all drivers, you know, when they were young, the fantasy is,
at some point, they wanted to be in the red car.
Exactly. It's pit babes and Ferraris. I mean, if I'm wrong, please correct me, but I think that's what's going on. But, no, I was stunned to hear today that Damon Hill, I mean, he is the president of the British Racing Drivers Club. I believe that would be sort of an important thing. You're the president, and he goes out and backs Kimi Raikkonen,
a Finnish racing driver.
Lewis Hamilton is leading the world championship. Why would he say this to the press? He should have kept it secret.
Well, maybe it's because of last season's meltdown?
No, I don't think so. I think there's something. I don't know. I think he maybe had a conversation
with Lewis Hamilton,
and Lewis Hamilton right now is sort of, you know, on a roll, and maybe he was short with Damon. Didn't give him the respect he deserves.
Maybe Lewis declined an invitation to tea
at the BRDC club.
Yeah,
that's possible. Now that's actually the most plausible.
Yeah, there's a more than likely he was invited to something dealing with the Racing Drivers Club, and he basically snubbed them for something, you know, less fortunate, like a date with an Italian supermodel.
Wow, you are keeping an open mind tonight, aren't you, Stephen? I don't know about that, but I found it very strange. He's the last British world champion, if I do recall correctly. And certainly I would think he would be supporting Lewis Hamilton. So Nas just arrived. He just ran through the swinging large front doors of the corporate headquarters and has plowed into the studio. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you. I was held up by security.
Exactly. Well, you know, ever since that incident the other day with the anti-Fernando protesters out front, what can I do, Nas?
No, I can.
It's security now.
I can understand
exactly.
That. I'm going to go open an account at ING.
Exactly, and I did the same just the other day. But your thoughts on Damon Hill and backing Kimi Raikkonen, and maybe he's got a bookie or something. I'm not sure, but I thought it was strange.
Well, hello to everybody, and good evening to Mr. Fab here, the ever-smiling Mr. Fab, the funky Fab, I should say. Anyway, Damon Hill, I also saw that news item, and I have to agree with him. I think the interesting thing about Kimi Raikkonen, he's out to some Finnish sauna he hasn't won a race since April, but he's still second in the championship, lo and behold. And my money is still on him, let me tell you that, because the tracks that are now coming, Monza, Spa, Shanghai, the last race, Sao Paulo, they're all going to suit. Traditionally, they've been, favorable to Ferrari's performance. So my money is still on Kimi Raikkonen. And I just have this thing, about Lewis Hamilton, like in the last race when he had this tire problem, which probably was from aggressive driving. And, it's good to have an aggressive driver, but I just have this sneaky feeling that Hamilton will make a mistake, lack of experience or whatever you want to call it, and then Kimi Raikkonen will capitalize on it.
Yeah, but don't forget, Lewis Hamilton said that he learned from last year, and now he's a bigger and better driver. And he said that he has speed in reserve, that he could just switch the switch and even go faster.
Well, I believe that. I mean, the guy is very quick. All you have to do is look at his career so far.
Absolutely.
How many drivers do you know who are on the grid today who had the same level of success he had in every formula he was in?
I can't think of any.
Yeah, the only people who would be like him would be a Schumacher or a Senna. Not saying that he's one of those, but the guy is ultra, ultra successful in anything he has done.
I agree. And what do you think has happened to Kimi now that he's at Ferrari? I mean, he does, from our perspective, from the viewer's perspective, he does look like he has lost some of his motivation. On the other hand, maybe he just can't get the grips with the Ferrari, somewhat like Sebastian Bourdais can't get the grips with the new STR.
Okay, did you watch the practice on Speed TV on Friday?
I did.
Okay. Did you hear the comment that Bob Washer made about Kimi Raikkonen showing up in a Alpine Stars
Correct.
Outfit when the team is with Puma? That is a major, major issue with corporate sponsors. And I really think Kimi is, sooner or later, is going to push the wrong buttons.
But he's a savvy guy. Why would he do something like that?
I have no idea. I mean, sometimes people get to the plateau, they think they can do anything, and, nobody walks on water. And as far as his performance is concerned, I don't know. Nobody will know because he's not telling anyone. But my thought of Kimi Raikkonen as a racing driver was that he would do in every race, almost every race, what he did in the very first race. Exceptional performance. He was like, his fastest lap was a second faster than the second fastest guy, But, even though he won the championship, coming back from 26 points, I mean, it's getting to a point where he's now reminding me of Jody Scheckter when, Scheckter won the championship for Ferrari in 1979, and then lifetime goal was achieved, and he himself has said he lost interest, he lost, if you lose the drive, it's all over.
Yeah, and he admitted it.
Yeah, and people, it's like Schumacher in 2005, he did not forget how to drive a race car. It's like Muy Macho Hombre de España and your favorite Fernando Alonso, he has not forgotten how to drive a race car, he just does not have the package. But once you lose the drive and desire, then it's all over. And mm-hmm. I'm a racing fan, and I'm
but
very...
But you can't say that necessarily about Kimi, because he did have fastest lap in Hungary.
Yeah, I mean, as and when I please.
Yeah, we can throw down the fast laps. I think part of it is he's been having some challenges with the car.
Driver of his caliber should not have those problems. And he's not a rookie, he's not in his second year.
Yeah, but still...
You're a world champion, Steve. I mean, this guy is no ordinary driver.
Doesn't mean he can't have the car
giving
him problems and it's not working
it's
best for him. Again, he's in the championship. He's still second in the championship.
My money is still
Everybody
on him.
Everybody thinks he's been taking a vacation, but he's still right there. And like you said, the tracks that we're going to for the rest of the season tend to favor Ferrari's package, except for possibly Valencia. And Singapore, the two road races, I think that Lewis may be hard-pressed to keep him at bay over the next couple of months because maybe he's just, waiting for the pressure to mount a little bit before he puts in his effort.
Well, My money is still on Kimi Raikkonen for the championship.
But to be honest with you, I think it's more Kimi Raikkonen than the car, because if you look at the start of the Hungarian Grand Prix, Felipe Massa, fairly motivated, gets around Lewis Hamilton in a very aggressive style, What happens to Kimi? He loses a spot to Fernando Alonso in a lesser car. I mean, I just can't believe that Felipe, that was a Freudian slip, that Felipe is really becoming a better driver than Kimi Raikkonen. Because, and trust me, I'm not a big Felipe fan, but lately he has performed, especially last weekend, he performed really, really well.
Well, the pass he made, I'll tell you, he gave Lewis Hamilton a taste of his own medicine.
There exactly.
No question. I mean,
that's what I wanted to see.
Yeah, and it's right, motor racing, you know, we enjoy motor racing regardless of who's doing the work. The business, you know, this was not in the same league as Nelson Piquet's pass in Hungary over Senna many years ago, 1986, the first Hungarian Grand Prix. But it was an incredible, incredible move. And when the tires started smoking, I says, "Oh, here we go, Malaysia." You know, when Son of Lewis said he tricked him, uh-huh. I said, "I mean, this guy's toast now. He'll be fourth or fifth now." But I mean, incredible, incredible.
No, he stuck it.
Yeah, he stuck it. He,
it was very impressive, and yeah. I enjoyed it. And I thought those opposing performances was a statement in itself for me.
And you know, when you get to the level of the Raikkonens, the Alonsos, the Schumacher, the Senas, nobody expects you to win every race.
Of course,
but
not.
They expect you to perform at least. You know, I mean, not
and challenge.
You know, yeah, exactly. Not like, and this is where people have a problem with Massa. I mean, I've noticed Massa will have a... I mean, he bounces back very greatly. I mean, even we saw that
he does bounce
year.
Back, and I was very impressed. Yeah. And I mean, I'm almost on the bandwagon with the Massanets.
Yeah.
I mean, I was very impressed with this young Brazilian.
Yeah, the reason people have a lot of problem with him, and so do I, is then what you're doing today, that's what you need to do if you every weekend, basically, if you want to be world champion. I mean, you cannot go to sleep for a couple of races and then boom, you know, nobody can touch me today.
Consistency.
Yeah, and that's what wins championship, and especially this day and age when things are so reliable. And I don't know if you're talking about reliability when he had a Kablamo. But I mean, it's you have to be there. I mean, the Ferrari drivers, whoever was driving for Ferrari today, that car is good enough to be on the podium each and every race. And I think any driver who drives that car, and if he can finish in the top three every race, he will be world champion.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's easy to say that. There will be a mistake. Somebody will run into you. That will be a mechanical issue. But you have to be there.
To be honest with you, I think it was lucky for Felipe Massa to have a Kablamo now, because you'd rather have it now instead of Japan
or China
or Brazil when it's going to be brutal. Very important.
Yeah, when you run out of time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what goes around comes around, as we saw in 2006.
Exactly. We saw that. Bravo, bravo, bravo. So anyway, let's move on and quickly jump to Honda begging for the services of Fernando. A real quick snippet on this. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. And I know Ross Braun is, I think there's more psychological warfare within Honda with this big statement, and even Fernando said he was flattered. Oh, that's just, that's cheap, just peachy. But does Fernando really want to go to another team for just 1 year and really comes out looking like a consultant?
Mercenary.
Going to another team for 1 year. Everybody knows the Ferrari thing, and I just don't think it's very advisable.
Well, I have a... talking of your man, Alonso, I do have a... We haven't done a motorsport masala for a while, so I do have a balti of a very spicy motorsport masala. And I will proceed if you instruct me to.
You know what? I'm ready for some marsala right now.
Okay. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay.
Okay. You may want to get a cup,
a glass
of Peroni or, Perrier. Okay. No,
I'll have
it's
a Perrier.
Business. It's, yeah, exactly. It's business of motor racing. Helen Henry, a very respected and seasoned Formula One reporter for Guardian newspaper in England, he's claiming that Alonso will be with Braun at Brackley for 2009 before moving to another team located near Bologna in 2010. And we all know what that is, okay? Question is, what will Honda achieve with Alonso in one season? And normally, half a season is spent in knowing the workings and members of the team, or to locate the brake pedal in some cases. But I think Alonso is beyond that, case. With such a short stay, only beneficiary, I think, would be Jenson Button, and which could be another problem for your man. Because Button can run with Alonso, it will confirm Button can be all dressed up as champion if given the proper package. And we all know nobody wins the championship without the very best package. PR impact of Alonso at Honda is huge, no question about it. They sell cars everywhere. Okay, but with U.S. as Honda's biggest overseas market, not many will be in accord that his signing will be of any help here. Given his behavior at previous employer, he may create another civic unrest. Best, this is my suggestion, best is to leave him on the ridgeline at Renault. But wait, there's more. Alonso, like Jacques Villeneuve and Juan Pablo Montoya, Monty, has created a kitten caboodle of his own career. And I'm disappointed. I'm not trying to diss the guy. I'm disappointed in the sense that I cannot see a very competitive, top macho driver in a top team. Because, you know, what package he has right now, he's not going to win. While there is no denying of his talents and tremendous racing achievements, his only hope to regain his world title is with Ferrari, and they may post a driver wanted soon, kind of like Volkswagen drivers wanted. Alonso will be well advised, and he sure can use some good advice. Maybe not from me, from somebody else. Alonso will be well advised to mount his abundant racing talents on the prancing horse after making sure in writing that stable next door houses a pony in terms of racing talents. Perhaps a horse with no name. But there is high note for Alonso. His fellow countryman Placido Domingo paid a visit to the Hungarian Grand Prix and expressed his desire to see his homeboy at Ferrari, saying it would be the unison of two great passions. And Senor Rogers, what's your fury and theory on this rumor, Alonso at Honda?
It's very simple. He's not going to Honda. Flavio is going to stay one more year at Renault before retiring. He will remain. He will sign another. I think he's got his two-year deal ends in 2009. And I think Flavio is going to talk to Fernando and go, come on, one more year of bravo, bravo, bravo. I'll go my way. You go your way. And everybody's happy.
But I also heard that there is apparently a contract in his clause with Renault that if Renault finishes fourth in the Constructors' Championship, he's locked into them.
Good. And you know what? I think that's a great clause.
Actually, I think really the only thing that Honda gains by having Alonso in 2009 is a lighter wallet. Because they're going to have to pay him a lot of money for 1 year of service. It doesn't really make sense. Ultimately, I think it would be more disruptive long-term for Honda to fill that, you know, basically have someone like that come in and then go out, and then you've got a void that you have to try to fill.
But, you know, I have an idea. Maybe that's what they're thinking, that they can get him for 1 year in case the package is best or one of the best. Then they can contact Jenson Button's attorney to help him sort out the Ferrari contract.
Exactly.
I'm going there? No, I'm not going there. Oh, I'll go there? No, I'm going to stay here. Yeah, let me go back to McLaren now.
And they fully know that, you know, in 2006, Fernando won the world championship and then left Renault. I mean, even if the package at Honda becomes competitive, he still wants to be at Ferrari. The glamour and glitz of Ferrari is every driver's passion, a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Now, don't get me wrong. What you wish for is usually
might come true, just as Jean Alesi. This guy had a contract with Williams early 90s, where he should have stayed after signing the contract, you know.
Exactly.
Bailed out and went to,
well, even, you know, Mansell, when he was at Ferrari, he wasn't happy. Alan Prost went to Ferrari. He wasn't happy.
He was fired from Ferrari.
I mean, these great drivers, once they get to Ferrari, because it's always that, the prancing horse. But in the end, reality hits them smack in the face, and it's not that exciting.
Yeah, well, they think they're going to get the Ferrari for the company car.
Which when they only do.
But then they give them the Fiat, and then they're like, oh, what the heck, man?
But and I think this explains a little bit about what's happening in Kimi Raikkonen's head. He went to Ferrari because he was wanted at Ferrari. But working at Ferrari is not everybody's
cup of tea.
Camembert, as we say. Well, I mean, so it fits Schumacher well, but it doesn't fit everybody's personality.
No, a lot of it depends on the timing and circumstances.
Absolutely,
you know.
And the personnel. Yeah. I mean, a lot of things have to come together really well to have a happy atmosphere.
The thing for Schumacher is that he basically brought
his entourage.
His guys with him, which I think made a lot of difference. When he went to Ferrari, he had some really talented guys behind him in Braun and Todd.
I agree.
To kind of run the team to make him the best he could be. And right now, we've been seeing things at Ferrari that we kind of expected to see with the departure of Todd, in that the team is basically all Italian again, and it seems that things are falling through the cracks at times where they're a little disorganized or they're making mistakes that they weren't making 2 years ago.
Yeah, and not only that, but the drivers, as we know, have contractual agreements to promote the sponsors. And when a driver shows up in an Alpine Star racing suit instead of a Puma, there's some underlying problems there.
Oh, major. I mean, let me assure you.
That his manager or his administrative assistant wasn't on top of him to make sure he put on the right suit.
No, this is happening from Kimi himself, and I'm sure we'll find out later on in the season.
Luca Montezemolo, as you know, is a lawyer by profession, educated at New York University, I believe. And he's a sharp guy. I'm sure he's not going to be very pleased with this kind of stuff.
Exactly. And I'm sure he's very disappointed.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not only with his performance, but his behavior. So,
I mean, the thing is, you know, I mean that package is so good. An average good driver can win races and win championship. I mean, and they must be wondering, man, we let Michael Schumacher go for this guy.
I know.
I think that was a bigger decision. That was more of a long-term decision for them because Michael had been there so long. And with the turnover in team management, so to speak, it made more sense to move Michael along than to keep him.
Well, to be honest with you, I think they should have gotten rid of Todd and kept Michael to smooth in the new directors in the paddock.
No, Michael Schumacher is a racing driver, and that's what
true,
he does best.
That's true, but he's also
best,
a fairly good technical advisor. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, but Jean Todt was not a technical advisor.
No, not at all. He was a manager.
He was the Napoleon.
Exactly.
In Maranello.
So real quickly, I just want to talk about BMW. They have really dropped a lot further back than Dr. Mario Tyson expected them to. In the press, BMW weren't involved in the Hungarian Grand Prix is the headline. what's going on? Is BMW really losing? And are they going to keep their third spot in the Constructors' Championship? I mean, Renault is catching up with Toyota. Renault finished fourth and sixth, which is a really good result for them. I don't know. Or has BMW completely stopped developing the 2008 car and they've moved on to 2009? And they're just going to be satisfied with these kinds of
I don't know that anybody ever completely stops developing the current car. You end up putting your focus on your next year's car, but you continue to do some development. I'm actually a little bit surprised in how much BMW's dropped off, really, since they got their win. It's kind of like, oh, we got our win. We've reached our goal for the season. Let's coast. Really surprised to see Nick Heidfeld not get into Q2. Really surprised.
Despite the email you got, you're saying this?
I'm surprised that he didn't get. He's been very consistent in that regard, and that's a surprise that he didn't get into the next round. And then he had a reasonable race, but not the kind of race that we would have expected. But he also started further back than he typically does. But again, they were not, like Clark said, they were not nearly as competitive in this race as they have been. It'll be interesting to see. In Valencia, they did reasonably well on the road course, but when we start getting back to the fast tracks like Italy and Spa to see whether or not they pick back up some of that pace. But it seems odd that they haven't developed as fast as, say, Renault.
And, you know, are we bashing Heidfeld? I mean, Heidfeld gets a lot of points. He's been consistently in the points, but even he admits that his quality woes are not behind him like he was hoping. He has talked about it personally, that he's not very good in quality. And I don't think the team has helped him out very well when there's traffic on the track. They need to get him out there when there's a clean track. It's a team effort. And, you know, I could be Nick Heidfeld bashing, but I do that with everybody. I mean, I've been picking on Piquet at the beginning of the season for weeks on end. I've fired him at least 3 or 4 times. So we'll see about that.
Only 3 or 4?
Only 3 or 4, and that's on a good day. Real quickly, also, I have a quote about McLaren, which I thought was pretty interesting from Paul-Henri Cayet on their website. And I thought this was great stuff. Now, of course, we know there are no number twos at McLaren. They're a happy family, and it's all fine and wonderful. But I really want to see how long this beautiful friendship lasts between Lewis Hamilton and Heikki Kovalainen.
Now, what is your problem with no number one or number two at McLaren?
I think it's a matter of belief.
No, I mean, this team had Prost and Lauda go at each other's throat.
That's true.
They had,
I agree.
You know, Prost and Senna go. I mean, that's the way it is.
No, I know. And I think that could be sometimes a mistake. I think a number one and a number two is a good plan.
Well, you know, that's how Williams operates.
They do, exactly.
Yeah, they would rather lose a championship as they did in, 86, than try to help one guy. So I think you have too much of a passion for Alonso, and you just cannot handle
Alonso.
You just cannot handle
I can't
Hamilton.
Let go.
You just cannot handle that. Hamilton is a very quick driver.
He is a very quick driver. I can see that with my own eyes. But everybody thinks that
everybody's a family at
McLaren.
No, it's motor racing. Everybody, you know, wants to win, and so does Heikki Kovalainen. But you know, hey. It happens. You put two drivers in a team, and sooner or later, one of them is the, you know, normally the faster driver.
It's called the pecking order.
It's called the performance pecking order.
Exactly.
Simple as that.
Well, just
and nothing is forever. You know,
I agree.
People who are pushing other people today, some years down the road, somebody's going to push them.
Quick quote from Paul-Henri Cayet, who's the photographer that Kimi Raikkonen shoved a few races back.
You and I have had dinners
we've
with
had,
them a few
yes,
times.
Yes, we've had dinner with them, but yeah. I don't want to throw in any personal stuff.
No, but we keep business as business. Okay, what's the quote?
The Kovalainen-Hamilton relationship will be a good one, I believe, as Heikki with Lewis reminds me of Berger with Senna.
Yes.
There cannot be two roosters in the same hen house.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
What is he trying to say here?
I think somebody's going to win.
He's pretty much spelling out who will. The reason Berger had such a good relationship with, and this is his own verbiage, he realized after their first race together in Phoenix.
Who was Machismo.
Yeah.
Yeah, but right now, if
he gave up.
At Heikki's demeanor, he's not going to admit defeat right now.
Well, I don't think Gerhard Berger admitted at that time, but now he can say that. I mean, you know, you have to have some self-esteem and believe you can beat the guy.
I concur.
And you don't have to beat the guy on the track all the time to win the championship.
Oh, it's been proven so much.
And that's where I have my problem with your man.
Machismo? Okay.
Yeah.
No way. I mean, don't forget, K.K. Rosberg only won one race and won the world championship.
Yeah, and sometimes, as I was discussing with Mr. Faub, sometimes it happens quite a bit. It's not the first time a new guy. I mean, look what happened at Ferrari in 1974. Clay Regazzoni joins the team, who had won races with them before, and Ferrari was ready to sign your homeboy, Jean-Pierre Gerrier, and he tells them, no, Niki Lauda is a pretty good driver, and Lauda comes in, and in 3 years together, what happens? Regazzoni wins three races in 3 years, and Lauda is two-time world champion, third time misses by 1 point. So, you know, it happens.
Welcome to Formula One.
Yeah, welcome to the world of winning, as Ron Dennis said to Heikki Kovalainen.
I saw that.
That was very nice.
That's sweet and loving, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
I bet you they baked a cake for him, too.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label, Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid Nass, welcome back to the studio. I hope your tea was rich and delicious.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Greetings and racing regards from out west to Budapest. We will start with my two zlotys on the Hungarian Grand Prix, with your express written consent, please. Qualifying saw 10th career pole position for Lewis Hamilton from 28 Grand Prix starts, which is very impressive, no matter how you look at it. and an all-McLaren front row for the first time since Monza 2007. And who won that race, sir?
I believe Lewis Hamilton.
No, your man.
I'm trying to make you happy, Nasser.
In his happier days at McLaren.
Really?
Anyway, Hungarian Grand Prix 2008, a high for Hecky, a mechanical meltdown for Massa, and no-run flat technology for Hemi. The race belonged to Ferrari's Felipe Massa, but victory went to Finland's Kovalainen and his McLaren, who becomes the 100th driver to win a Formula One race. A century of winners. And let's hear from the winner.
There's no style points in Formula One, and it's 10 points for me and very good result.
After the race, Kovalainen said before the team could radio him, he knew Massa was out as he passed him and saw the yellow helmet. Initially, he thought it was a Toro Rosso because of the red paint.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, every Finnish Grand Prix winner has gone on to become world champion sooner or later. So the future is good given the fact that he has been retained by McLaren for 2009 season. Third one in a row for Vodafone, McLaren, Mercedes team. So they are happy. A team I really like, you know, when John Dennis greeted him on the radio by saying, "Welcome to the world of winning." How did that sound to you, sir?
I thought it was peculiar, but that's just moi.
Yeah. And Ron, responding to his ex-driver who is still whining, Ron has stated that both drivers are free to race and will be given equal opportunity. And he goes on to say, hey, go and ask any of our previous drivers if they got the same equipment and treatment. And he says, all of them will say the same thing except one. Who could that be, I wonder?
Could be that double world champion I like.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. You're not talking about Mika Hakkinen.
Mika Hakkinen, yeah, that's who I was talking about.
Okay. He's happy in retirement.
Is he?
Yeah. Anyway, Massa shot into the lead from second row at the start and never looked back till a rare engine failure 3 laps from the end robbed him of a certain win. And very, very impressive. You know, this pass, you know, people think I'm anti-Massa or anything, something like that. But this pass is like the pass Alonso made on him in Germany last year.
I agree.
You know, or the pass Raikkonen made on Fisichella in Japan some years ago.
Yeah.
This is what motor racing is all about. So it was very, very impressive. And now, if you listen to the another podcast, you know what happened at BBC. His race engineer, Rob Smedley, who is also British, like Lewis, he was not very complimentary to Lewis. He was pretty much, you know, stabbing him, you know, killing me softly with his words kind of stuff. He said after the race that he would like to borrow a phrase from Hamilton and claim they destroyed him before Massa had his problem. And he has a couple of other jabs at Lewis Hamilton also.
Good for him.
Yeah. And you should listen to it. Maybe we should provide a link on that, you know.
Maybe we should.
Yeah. And the pole sitting McLaren of Lewis Hamilton suffered a puncture, taking last year's winner out of contention, which I'm not sure, but I think it was self-induced, maybe too aggressive driving.
Perhaps.
Yeah, but it's
not managing the race.
Yeah. And, you know, it is this point that I'm concerned about him not winning the championship. Mistakes like this, or another, you know, lack of experience or brain, whatever you want to call it, different people will call different things. But that's what I worry about him. But he fought back to finish fifth and retain his championship lead. Certainly his lucky day. He not only retained his lead, but slightly extended the lead in the championship. German Timo Glock enjoyed, oh, what a feeling, as he made his first podium appearance by finishing second in his Toyota. And he was doing a pretty good job holding
back. I thought so, too. And yeah. The Toyota itself was looking very good.
Yeah. And this is the first time he has scored any points in any place other than Canada. All his previous Formula One points have come in races in Canada, which is where he made his debut some years ago. And guess who's coming to dinner? Possibly the championship dinner. And Damon Hill has also said the same thing. Out of sight, out of limelight, and as always, out of words, Kimi is creeping back in the championship chase ever so gingerly. Kimi, hungry for a win since April's Spanish Grand Prix, was third and is now second in the championship, only 5 points behind Hamilton. At this time last year, Kimi was 20 points behind Hamilton, and we all know how the story changed in Sao Paulo.
So lots of things can certainly happen.
Oh, yeah, we still have like 70 points at stake, you know. And Raikkonen described, as only he could describe a race, quite boring, which is his pretty much the standard answer after any race.
And, unless, of course, he wins it.
You know, I think even then he said it was boring, you know, because there was nobody to challenge him. And he was asked after the race on Sunday if he knew what he was doing next season, and he responded, yes, I do, and everyone will find out when I make the announcement what it is.
That's sort of a strange thing to say.
Yeah, but, you know, what do you expect? I mean, when we're dealing with Shakespeare of, you know, Finlandia.
And traditionally, Ferrari announces at Monza anyway, right?
Yeah. What's your take? You think he'll stay at Ferrari, or he will just retire?
No, I think he's going to stay till 2009, for sure. And then after that, who knows? I mean, it depends on what kind of financial situation he's in.
He must have a lot of money. Money is not an issue now at this stage.
No, it's not. But still, you never know. People mismanage their money. And
that's true.
If he's still young, so he could race further. He could go to another team. He could go to Honda. It's wide open.
Yeah. Personally, I will not be surprised if he just bails out at the end of the season.
And you know
but
what?
I will be very surprised if he stays in Formula One after his Ferrari contract is over.
Yeah, I agree. But because he does enjoy ice racing, snowmobile racing, and he likes being in Finland. So,
but if he wins the championship, then you know he may carry on.
Yeah, possible.
Yeah, and. Both him and teammate Massa are still serious contenders for the championship. Massa is only 3 points behind Raikkonen. But I will say, if any of the remaining races are, and we've discussed this before in a previous podcast, that if there are few of the races are in rain, I suspect Massa's chances will be washed away as both Lewis and Raikkonen, especially when awake and alert, have performed better in the wet than Massa. Would you agree on that, sir?
Absolutely.
So finally, we have a few agreements going on.
We do occasionally.
This evening, late in the evening. Now, the crow that some people want me to eat if Massa wins the championship was ready to take off from Sao Paulo Airport, and I was online checking on Expedia checking his arrival at the San Jose Airport, but now his departure has been delayed.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, let's hope he's not traveling JetBlue or he'll be stranded on the tarmac for many, many days.
And he'd have to pay for his pillow.
There you go. Fernando Alonso was fourth. He is still about, you know, this is, again, you know, looking behind the headlines. I noticed in practice qualifying, and I think the race also was the same story, he is still half a second faster than Nelson Piquet Jr. on any given race weekend, which speaks well for him. And Nelson is still in his first year, but does not really speak very well for Nelson, but I'm sure he'll put it together. You know, Peter Windsor made a comment. Nelson, you know, was again in the point, finishing sixth. I believe he was sixth, right?
Correct.
And so he's beginning to establish some credibility. But Peter Windsor made a comment about him in the pre-race show, something which I experienced myself personally last year, saying that Piquet Jr. is somewhat grumpy in the best of moods. So my question is, I wonder what his mood and pride will be if and when he wins a race. And I wish him well, you know. Trulli was seventh, so both Toyota scored points. Final point from eighth place was taken by the man who made an impressive debut at this race 2 years ago, Robert Kubica, in his BMW. And just like Alonso and now also Bruno Senna, his name is being linked with different teams, notably Ferrari. This could be a good driver for Ferrari because this guy is very hungry and has what it takes. And I'll tell you something. According to Kim, I mean, just his opinion, and he knows a lot more than I do about driving a race car, Lewis Hamilton says that the driver he fears most on the grid is Robert Kubica because his background is from the same karting team, so he knows this guy very well. In the Constructors' Championship, Ferrari is 11 points ahead of McLaren, 111-200. BMW is third on 90. Toyota leaps ahead of Renault, 35-31. I hope you're not throwing any stones at my white Camry today.
Too late? Nah, sir.
Okay. Rumors are that if Renault, we've discussed this, if Renault is in the top four in the Constructors' Championship, that will lock in Alonso for next season. And I really think if Alonso has a contract to go to Ferrari in 2010, I think it will be best for everybody for him to stay at Renault.
I agree.
Because they can turn the leaf around, you know.
I agree completely. Next year's a completely open book. We don't know where anybody will be.
But, you know, I think realistically, scenery will be pretty much the same. The top dogs will be top dogs.
I refuse to believe that, Nasser. I believe Renault will be the top dog.
Well, I was going to include them in the
okay.
top
Thank
dogs.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Nasser.
Shall I include them in the top frogs?
Touché.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And also the next Formula One race is in 3 weeks, round 12 of 18, European Grand Prix on the new street circuit in Valencia, Spain on August 24th. Who's going to win that race, Mr.
Fernando.
No, realistically.
Oh, realistically.
Not in your dreams.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When you wake up at 4:30 and watch at 5 o'clock.
Nelson Piquet. No.
Who's the best street fighter, you think, on the grid today?
Well, Fernando in the right car would be the man to pick.
In the right car, but we're talking about given the equipment they have right now.
It's either going to be Lewis Hamilton or Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah, and Massa too. But
Massa's pretty good. Yeah. Depends on what happens.
If it's not raining.
Nobody knows this track.
Yeah.
But Lewis Hamilton seems to learn tracks he's never been to quicker than everybody else.
Yeah. And
so, once again.
A bonus thrown to Lewis Hamilton. Exactly.
I'm a nice guy, Nasser. But the secret is this track is not on PS3. So Lewis Hamilton won't be able to play the game in practice. So this is really open to everybody. And don't forget, they're also calling this the Grand Prix of the World.
Oh, is that what they're calling
it?
Grand Prix of the World? Mondial?
Mondial, they stole
Grand
it.
Prix of the Mondial? Okay, cool. Future of Formula One. Recently, Max Mosley said in an interview that CVC partners could be willing to sell if they received an offer from a sovereign wealth fund, whatever that means. I hope he's not talking about the King of Borneo. The whole business at the moment depends on a man who is 78 years old taking a stab at, Bernie Ecclestone. Not surprisingly, Formula One's commercial rights holder, CVC Capital Partners, has dismissed speculation it is considering selling its 75% stake in the sport, saying they are happy with their investment and the man running the show, of course, Bernie Ecclestone. And CVC used to own Dorna, which runs MotoGP, and then the European, the Trade Commission said, hey, you cannot... anti-monopoly thing, so they had to get rid of the MotoGP. Talking of GP, we go to GP2 now, which was also in action at Hungaroring. Race 1, Lucas Di Grassi. What an impressive performance this kid is doing. He's the Renault test driver. I think he missed the first or two races. Anyway, Lucas Di Grassi takes his first win of the season. Pole sitter Romain Grosjean took out championship leader Giorgio Pantano and finished a lap down. And Grosjean is very quick, but he's
got a certain
showing his inexperience.
He's
every
got a
second.
David Coulthard ness to him.
No, he's much faster than that. He has a little Andretti Cesaris syndrome, crashing
That's
everywhere.
It. But no, I think he'll work. I call this, it's one of those phases. Kids go
live through. And learn. Yeah, but he's very quick, which is very important. Andrea Zuber from Austria was second and Bruno Senna third over his Indian teammate Karun Chandok. And Karun Chandok and Senna are with iSport and Grosjean is with ART. Talking of ART, part owner is Nicolas Todd and his right-hand man assistant, Mr. Olivier Mann, who was in San Francisco past Friday. So I went there at dinner with him.
How was that?
The dinner was like the F1 Weekly launch. It was at a Thai restaurant.
Huh, what do you know? Yeah. I think it could be a motorsports special.
Yeah, Pat Kimhaw special, Yeah, it was just nice meeting him and talking about racing stuff. And, Lewis Hamilton drove for ART. And I asked him, I said, is this kid a lucky punk or is he good? And you know what he said to me? He said, he is very, very good driver. So I think the kid is just good. People will have to suck it up. Anyway. Yeah, I know. Wouldn't it be fun if him and Alonso end up at Ferrari in a couple of years? Oh, wouldn't that
you
be something?
You wish just the frightening things.
The prancing horse will become wild horses.
But don't forget, he signed his life away to McLaren. He said he's going to live his whole life right next door to Ron.
Yeah, I don't like that. Well, it will be a very comfortable living, that's for sure. But I don't like that I'm going to stay with one team because this thing, goes up
don't
and down.
Don't worry. As his head continues to grow and it doesn't fit at McLaren anymore, and all of a sudden he sees that prancing horse and the allure. And the frisson,
oh yeah.
No,
I'm reading with a lot of interest his head and all his ego and everything he says is quoted and analyzed through a prism or whatever. But you live and learn, and he's going to make mistakes.
Of
and,
course,
as
they all do.
Yeah, as we all do. Race 2, GP2. Sebastian Buemi from Switzerland was the winner over Spaniard Andy Susek, and Bruno Senna was again on the podium in third place, which brings him to within 7 points of championship leader Giorgio Pantano, and it's looking more and more likely that I think before the September is over, Senna will be announced. Bruno Senna with some team, I have a feeling.
But don't forget, Berger downplays any Senna reports, saying that I run a team in partnership with Red Bull and shouldn't mix personal things with business. Speaking about his personal relationship with Bruno Senna, but I also tend to agree with you. I think Bruno is making a point that he believes he's going to be prepared for Formula One at the end of this GP2 season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's knocking on the championship door. What more can you do? So it'll be good to see him there. And okay, now we stay in Hungary and we go to Formula BMW Europe. This is fast becoming a season of double wins. You know, every time a driver wins, he wins the second race also. And this is the trend throughout the season so far. Both races in the opening round were won by Adrian Tombay, who will be racing at Road America in the Formula BMW USA, which is coming, I believe, later this month. Then followed double wins in the next three races for Esteban Gutierrez from Hungary. And for the next three races. And in Hungary, it was time for double win for 17-year-old your next Alonso, Daniel Juncadea. He's been knocking on the door, and he finally won some races. So good for him. Esteban Gutierrez and Adrian Tombay took out each other in race one. Gutierrez was second in the second race. And this had to happen. I'm surprised it took so long. And but I got a press release from Tombay, from his press people. And this is not, at least so far, it's not a situation. He took us out intentionally, this and that. So far it's still...
We call it a racing incident.
Yeah, so far. Okay. Gutierrez was second in the second race and extends his lead in the championship to 50 points over Juncadea, with Adrian Tombay 2 points behind. So he has gone from leading the championship to third, but still within striking distance. FIA GT, the Spa-Francorchamps 24-hour race, Vita Phone, Maserati finished first and second. Winning drivers were Andrea Bertolini, Mikhail Bartel, Stefan Sarrazin, and Eric van der Poel. Turning the page, we find British Formula 3 on one of their now regular trips outside the UK. I saw them in action in the Belgian Ardennes Forest, which would mean Spa-Francorchamps. Team Carlin was on fire, taking the top four slots in race number one. Oliver Turvey from England winning over Kiwi Brendan Hartley, who I predict will be in Formula 1 within 3 years. Spaniard Jaime Alguersuari, who I'm fairly confident will get there too. And Aussie Sam Abe, and I say this because of performance, not that I like them or anything like that. Race 2, Brendan Hartley pulled a last lap Mexican head dance on Sergio Perez to take victory. Nick Tandy was third, which brings us to World Rally Championship and a smile on Clark Rogers' face.
Machismo!
As Rally of Finlandia was won by Sebastian Loeb for Citroën, so a double smile for you. And this is only the second time in 17 years that a non-Finnish driver has won this event. And it's Citroën's first win in Finlandia since 1962. Mikko Hirvonen, who was a local kid, was second for Ford and is now only 1 point ahead of Loeb in the championship. And I predict Loeb will win the championship. Chris Atkinson of Australia was third for Subaru. Australian V8 from Winton, winner in race one was Jamie Wincup of Ford. Will Davison continued Ford's success by winning race two. In race three, victory went to Holden driver Garth Tender, who now leads the championship. Okay, now we come to Grand Am from Circuit Gilles Villeneuve in Montreal. Local driver Darren Law got screwed on lap 69, the final lap, when he ran out of fuel and lost a certain victory. Another Canadian, Mark Wilkins, passed him, and Spaniard Antonio Garcia to grab the closest finish in Grand Am history. And history was made at this circuit because the NASCAR Nationwide Series was also there, and it saw an all alien podium, which is very, very rare at NASCAR. Canadian drivers taking the top two slots, Ron Fellows winning over Patrick Carpentier. Australian Marcus Ambrose was third. Another local favorite, Jacques Villeneuve, was sixth. And this was the first championship race in NASCAR history to be run in the rain.
Now, Jacques Villeneuve was running in this particular race?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know he kept his nationwide seat.
No, it's because it was in Canada, they're trying to put together a deal.
That's good.
Yeah, good for
probably
him.
Like an exemption in golf kind of thing.
Yeah. And Sprint Cup, the main series at Pocono in Pennsylvania, winner Carl Edwards over Tony Stewart and Jimmy Johnson, win number four of the season for Cousin Carl, as they call him in NASCAR. Now we come to Crosstown Traffic. I don't know if you saw this. You want to do a little?
A little Hendrix?
Yeah. Okay. We started with Formula 1, and we're going to finish this segment with Formula 1. As you know, Clark and Mr. Fab, at most Formula 1 races, there is a special lane for team personnel. They call it Bernie Avenue, if you're at a Formula 1 event. On the way to the track on Saturday, a van carrying members of Dave Price Racing GP2 team was involved in an accident and ended up in a ditch. Good news is nobody was seriously hurt, but there were some injuries. A medical helicopter landed on the road in case it was needed, and it was not needed, but the bird could not take off as the engine refused to start. So this created a major traffic delay, forcing Robert Kubica and Sebastian Vettel to hitch rides with locals on motorbikes. Raikkonen and Massa arrived at the track on team scooters. It can happen to the very best.
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. It's happened at races here also, you know, they get stuck in, especially Sears Point, you know, because there's one road leading to the track, or as they call it, Infineon Raceway these days. Okay, here is the big news. Finally, F1-Live.com and related websites are now part of ESPN, the total sports network. I wonder how long before F1 Live becomes NASCAR Live. ESPN is owned by ABC and they don't have NASCAR rights. I am hoping, against hope, they will try to get F1 coverage and maybe promote it in the US. But folks, don't hold your breath. This is the same network that cut to a Game Day America from a live Formula One race in the wee hours of the morning, just as Alain Prost was about to take the lead to win the Portuguese Grand Prix in the closing stages and break Jackie Stewart's record of 27 Grand Prix wins. I was watching this race and I could not believe they would do that. I think he was closing up, I believe it was Berger in the Ferrari leading, and it was going to make a pass, you know, if it's going to come down to the lap. Were you watching it live?
No.
Oh, man, unbelievable. It's like maybe two or three laps to go, and he's right behind him, and the next thing I know, oh, yeah, I think the defense of this team and all this, you know, hot. I could
and
not
believe
it.
And the emotional scars are still with you today, Nasser.
Yes.
I think that's...
The Heidi moment in Formula One arrived.
I understand, but it's going to be okay. Thank you. I have a quick supplemental for the World Rally Championship, because I'm going to embellish a little bit the fantastique
performance,
of course, of Sebastian Loeb and
The question I have, when will you embellish the excellent performance of you-know-who? Who's the cap you're wearing today?
And Fernando?
Yeah.
Fernando did a great job.
He doesn't need any embellishment, no?
No, he does a fantastic job. I thought Renault did very well, and I think they're... performance will continue to get better through the season. I think we have a chance to win a race, but don't quote me.
You know what? If I can get a 10-minute time slot from him, I would love to do an interview just for you.
That would.
What kind of question would you like to be asked?
You know, what's your favorite food? Stuff like that. Do you do a samba?
Really?
Exactly. Okay, let's get to the WRC, NAS. Okay, Rally of Finlandia, formerly known as the Rally of 1,000 Lakes. This was one of those rare times of the year that the FIA's two premier series ran on the same weekend. WRC and F1 had to share the international spotlight. Because Finland has often been referred to as a Grand Prix on gravel, the super fast, smooth roads with huge jumps, along with the vivid nightlife, make this rally a favorite of fans, teams, and drivers.
Vivid nightlife?
Vivid.
And Kimi still took part in the Grand Prix?
Exactly.
Wow.
So there you have it. Let's cut to the chase. Sebastian Loeb won. Like so many times in recent past, the WRC battles on stage mirror the current F1 results on track. Two teams stand out, and ours a cut above the rest. Ford and Citroën, the number one drivers in both teams, left the rest of the competitors in the dust. The Citroën of Loeb was never more than 18 seconds in front of the Ford of Hervonen. The racing was so close that they actually tied on three stages during the event. But at the end, Mikko had brought his Ford to within 9 seconds of Loeb, his Red Bull Citroën. The rest of the field was led by the still new Subaru of Australian Chris Atkinson, a full 3 minutes back. The results bring Seb to within 1 point of Hirvonen in the driver's standings and Ford 9 points up on Citroën in the manufacturer's race. Atkinson's consistency has earned him the third spot in the driver's standings. 2 weeks off and on to the rough, broken asphalt of Germany that will bring us back to a normal alternating weekend schedule with the other FIA Premier Series, our beloved Formula One. Thank you very much, Jay Streets, former rally driver here in America in some of the smaller series. Keep up the good work, Jay. We love those WRC reports. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with the wrap-up.
Maybe that's why Kimi was distracted, because he wanted to be taking part in the nightlife.
Nice to know man has his priorities.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
And welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. As we go into the wrap-up, on top of Steve Faub's agenda is email.
Well, Clark, our first one this week is from Sebastian in Birmingham, the UK. Thank you very much for letting us know who you are and where you're from.
Exactly.
Always a very important point with email. And he writes, "Dear sirs, what is it with the Nick Heidfeld bashing? On podcast number 296, had me fuming at your ignorant observations, including when discussing Q1, Steve." And he actually quotes us, which is, I don't recall anybody else quoting us. "He's having a hard time all the way around the last several races. I'm not sure his magic seems to have left him. Clark, if this continues throughout the rest of the season, he's out. Steve, he's got to have a resurgence. Clark, you're fired." Actually, can you put that one in for me?
You're fired.
There you go. "Heidfeld has scored more points than any other driver in the four races previous to Hungary, and for the last five, including Hungary, basically with Hamilton only 24, Kovalainen 23, Raikkonen 20, blah, blah. And if Heidfeld had not been obliged at Montreal to let Kubica pass because of team tactics, surely the probability that Heidfeld would have held position long enough to beat Kubica to win. Take the season as a whole. Heidfeld's early season was compromised by being repeatedly put on the Q3 heavy fuel strategies in the Q3, where Kubica was given the lighter strategies, you know, because they know Heidfeld's going to collect the points. In Malaysia, after the farce in Q3 that set back his qualification off the start, Heidfeld was going around the outside of Trulli to get the inside for turn two, only to have the Toyota driver understeer and knock him off the track. In Spain, Heidfeld was caught out by a safety car, by the new safety car rules, and the subsequent penalty ruining his race. In Monaco, Alonso wrecked any chance he had of a points haul in the high attrition rate. Meanwhile, Kubica has had a smooth, incident-free season with the benefit of being given better fuel strategies, plus probably an extra 4 points in a winning Canada from the team, yet the boy wonder is only 8 points ahead of Nick Heidfeld. Just out of interest, how many other drivers except Nick Heidfeld have overtaken two drivers at once, not once, not twice, but 3 times a season? For that matter, in the last 10 years, how often has this happened? I'm not putting Kubica down, obviously a fine driver, but Heidfeld has outscored him 102-78 in 07 and 08. My prediction is that Nick will outscore his teammate this season. He's dismissed as a mere points collector, but what the hell else wins championships? The podcast seems to include derogatory comments towards Heidfeld at any excuse. These further quotes are not a complete set. Clark, Nick Heidfeld is not contributing. Steve, he is not really bringing them any benefit." I'm sorry, I don't remember making that particular statement. But "Steve, the way Heidfeld's been going, if you don't have two cars in the points consistently, and teams like Renault manage to get two cars in the points consistently, they could lose third place too." And that's true if they don't. "Presumably your podcast is supposed to be informed in its opinions. But in the face of facts like these, that you have no excuse for not being in possession of, just how do you figure BMW should consider finding someone better to partner Kubica? If Heidfeld's recent results are not delivering the points, then how come Kubica's recent results for less points do not rate even stronger criticism? Why isn't his position being questioned? May I suggest you find someone that can, A, can count, or B, has looked at the race results? Yours, Sebastian, in Birmingham." And I think the reason that Clark and I have been kind of bashing Heidfeld is that he's been having a hard time qualifying well. And for the first time in several years, he did not get out of Q3 in Hungary, and that's why he was kind of the target of our ire in Hungary.
Absolutely, and not only that, but Nick Heidfeld himself said he was trying to get over his woes and hoping it was behind him in terms of qualifying form. And not only that, Mario Tyson is looking at Nick Heidfeld and some of his problems, and I think they should look at the team problems in getting Nick out in a good, clear lane in qualifying. But I also, when I got the email from Sebastian, and I appreciate the email, I liked it very much.
Yeah, definitely. We always like to get that back because we do kind of get myopic sometimes.
I don't, Stephen.
Well, yeah, but speak yourself.
On the other hand, I listened to the podcast over again to myself while I was commuting to work. And you know what? I think he does make a good point. I don't know what Steve and I were thinking, but we were bashing Nick Heidfeld more than I've ever bashed him before. So we might have gone a little bit overboard, and it always takes a good listener to email us and straighten us out. Because I do agree Nick Heidfeld's collected a lot of points, but on the other hand, I still think he's got some issues to deal with in terms of qualifying. And even though Sebastian Bourdais got a 5-grid penalty, I think you got to stop the excuses and you got to go, baby. Next email, Nasser?
Well, this is an email from Francisco T, and he did not write where he is from. But it's a very long email, and because of time constraint, I won't be able to read the whole thing. I will definitely, in due course of time, respond to all his points, or try to respond to all his points. Anyway, you know, he has been watching Formula One for 24 consecutive years, and he has now stopped because of all the shenanigans that are going on. And he writes that Max Mosley and Ferrari, they have taken advantage of Stepney's act to finally get their revenge on Ron Dennis. And this is a perception that's shared by a lot of people that for whatever reason, FIA and Max Mosley in particular, they're out to get Ron Dennis. How much it is true, I don't know. But, you know, this thing that there is a strong bias from FIA towards Ferrari, this has been out there for many, many years, decades. And if you look at the people who are on the top echelon of FIA, there are quite a few people with very strong Ferrari connection. Marco Piccinini, who is named as one of the possible successor to Max Mosley, used to be a Ferrari team manager back in the 80s. And also, I must let the listeners know that our dear beloved host with the most, Clark Rogers, when he read this email, Francisco is not very complimentary of Mr. Alonso and how he operated last year. This, when Clark Rogers read this email, the studio turned into an instant Cape Canaveral. Several rockets were being launched, and I had to take cover outside, you know, under a tree.
Under the white Camry.
Yeah, under the white Camry, exactly. So, but I appreciate Francisco for taking his time, and he continues to listen to the show, which is good. And in due course of time, I will try to respond to all his points he has taken. He's also asking, you know, why do we give credit to Max Mosley? What has he done for the sport? The thing is, you know, when a corporation succeeds or something happens good, the person involved may not have done everything. Ross Brawn did not design the Ferrari that Schumacher was winning. But if you are in position of authority and in control, you do get the credit. Similarly, you take the blame, you know, when things go wrong.
I agree. I mean, since Jean-Marie Balestre, I think Max Mosley, when you look at Formula One as it is today, it's a very successful format.
Yeah, it is. And, it you know, Bernie is the driver behind all this, and who was his legal counsel all those years when you know, when they were trying to take over FIA, Mr. Max Mosley.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, if the guy does something wrong or a couple of things wrong, I mean, it does not negate all his positive work. So, you know, we'll go from there.
Exactly. Thanks a lot, Francisco, for another great email. So, interesting stuff. And now we move on to forum updates. Stephen?
Quick forum snippets provided by Yay, our good buddy on the forum. And we see he writes this week, snippets from the F1 Weekly Forum. The forum has been busier than ever this week. Lots of new members, lots of new posts. Welcome. Or lots of new members making lots of new posts. Welcome to the new members. During the Hungary race, the online text chat was buzzing. Shout-outs to Koala, Miguel, Eternal Tifosi, CFD Racer, Iceman, Zorpheus, Jackson, Apex Light, and Ye were all in on the business. Sihi Sin took the prediction competition win for Hungary, while Apex Slide is still in the overall lead. Inspired by Masa's bad luck in Hungary and a commentary by Brits on Pole, Miguel invites you to into the poor sod. He didn't deserve that thread to nominate your poor sod. There are active discussions on KERS, Imola 82, how we listen to F1 Weekly, how big can Lewis's head get, and the Masanets are growing, so get with the program. Thanks to Toby for fixing the image width problem. And finally, we said happy birthday to Lap Traffic and Madman Motors. That's all for this week's Chums. Cheerio. Keep up the good work.
And Nasser, you got a quick supplemental?
Well, you have. I see you have a DVD of 1982 Imola race, San Marino Grand Prix, controversial. And, you know, I would request people who have had a chance to review this race. And, again, we're not doing this to point finger who was right or wrong. But, you know, the media perception has always been that, you know, Didier Pironi stole the win from Gilles Villeneuve. I watched this race many, many times to get my own idea, and then I shared it with Miguel. And now you have the DVD, so please watch it and tell me what you think. And I request the listeners who have a copy of this race to please share their views after watching the race.
Everyone has their assignment, so chop, chop.
Okay.
Excellent. No, I've got mine, and I will look at the race, and then I will respond in the very, very eloquent thread on this specific race. Very exciting, Imola 1982. Machismo.
Yeah, 1982. Please do not respond by saying Fernando should have won this race.
Oh, darn. Okay, thanks a lot, everybody. Real quickly, we want to shout out to our friends, San Francisco Formula One Group. You can check them out at www.sff1.com. They're meeting at the usual Overtime Bar and Grill. If you want information, menu, and a lot of great links, these guys have a lot of pictures from Paul-Henri Caillé. So keep up the good work, Peter. Check them out. You know you want to. Also, check out the F1 Weekly MySpace site, myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. Any news on the Can-Am DVD? Nasser.
Yes, sir. You know, just before I got here, I got an email from Mr. Robert Nevison of Arden Production expressing that, you know, we will have the DVD soon. I don't have an exact date, but I expect – I responded to his email, so I should have an answer from him within 24 hours. And as soon as I get it, I will post it on the forum as to when this is available. And as soon as we get them, this will go out by airmail, priority mail, if airmail, wherever you are in this world, for those who ordered. So hopefully this will be resolved soon. And we apologize for the delay. We have no control over it. And thank you for your patience.
Absolutely. And the day we know it comes out, we'll put a little blurb in the front page telling everybody
there you go
to get your checkbook out now.
Yeah,
exactly.
PayPal also works.
Thank you, Nas. Keep up the good work. So now I just want to thank everybody who listens to the program. We really do appreciate it. And please send your emails. And if you wish to opine, name in town, name in town. Thank you very much and good night.
Good night.
Bye bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.